Alex, welcome back to the Pensacola Morning News, sir.
Hey, good morning, Andrew.
Hey,
good morning, everybody.
Good to have you. So we're about 4 weeks out from the end of session. Subcommittees are going to be wrapping up pretty soon. You got a bunch of bills as the education whip in the House here that you're overseeing, plus other bills that you're just working on yourself. But before we talk about that, let's kind of – I feel more like this is obligatory at this point, but I know you've weighed in on this on social media and in other places as well, so I wanted to have you give you a chance based on what we know at this point about what's going on with Matt Gaetz. Carte blanche, what do you want to say?
What we know is that there's an investigation going on and that the congressman has denied that he's done anything that would rise the level of criminal. My commentary, especially just seeing what's been being discussed right now, is I'm just kind of disappointed. There's a lot of political opponents to the congressman who are gloating and celebrating, and anyone who is talking in that manner right now is telegraphing to me and I think the rest of the world that they hope the allegations are true. I'll be the first to tell you, I hope that there is not a victim of child sex trafficking in existence. I hope that there was no one harmed, and if there was, then obviously the focus needs to be on the victim. But at this point, with the facts that we have, I have not seen any evidence that that's occurred. There's been no arrest or indictment that's occurred, and I'm still trying to figure out exactly how someone who got out of prison for real estate fraud had access to sensitive information about a DOJ investigation.
Yeah, I'm actually with you in the sense of I certainly hope that all of the allegations are false, partially because I hope that somebody that I have, had such good relationship with and enjoyed being friends with for quite some time now, Congressman Gaetz, I hope that none of the stuff alleged against him is true. But also for the other reason, which you mentioned, is that if it's true, there are victims. And we certainly should not ever hope that there were victims of some crime, again, especially against somebody who's an elected official. So I'm with you. We'll wait and see exactly what comes as a result of it. Anything else? I mean, you've said enough, but I just want to make sure you get a chance to comment about this because obviously you're pretty close to the congressman. So,
well, I mean, I've served for 3 years, and Congressman Gaetz has always picked up my phone when I've called for help. From my perspective, he's done a great job representing and pursuing the conservative causes that we all care about, supporting President Trump when he was in office, working diligently to try and get him reelected. He was a talent and a force in the Republican Party. At this point, there's kind of a cloud hanging over until the DOJ investigation closes or something else occurs. So. I hope that they're not true. At this point, I haven't seen any evidence that would disabuse me of, the congressman's own statement saying he didn't do anything illegal. There's no reason for me not to believe him until, more facts and evidence come out, if there is any.
Yeah, and by the way, I also am very much in agreement with you that, going to people who hated him in the electoral process and getting quotes from them about why he's a bad guy, I mean... What does that prove? Nothing has changed since when you ran against him in an election.
It proves that those people commenting are opportunists.
Yeah, well, I mean...
I
understand the comment. 437-1620 is the phone number. If you have questions for Alex Andrade, we'll always pose them to him to the degree that we can. Turning now to committees and bills, you're the education whip in the House, and that means that you are kind of in charge of superintending or overseeing a variety of different things, and many of them are of great interest to me, as education is my favorite issue, obviously. Care about the future if you care about education. So let's first talk about the Intellectual Freedom Bill. We talked about this last hour. This is the bill, as I understand it, that would require universities to do a survey of now faculty and staff and students to find out. It's not clear to me. It's not political viewpoint of them particularly as much as it's whether they believe there's intellectual freedom on campus. Is that right?
Exactly. The bill states specifically that this is a nonpartisan survey about the comfort of each individual to share their own political viewpoint, regardless of that political viewpoint. It's common knowledge that conservative students, right or wrong, do feel discomfort, sharing their political viewpoints on campus. There's running jokes amongst conservative groups that they have to tailor their political viewpoints in certain classes to be more liberal to get better grades. We don't know until we have objective, you know, scientific, you know, or but, you know, some type of evidence with any margin of error, whether or not that's actually going on. And so having this voluntary survey provided to students, faculty, and teachers, and allowing for that information to be engaged in, it's just anyone concerned about that is just afraid of competing in the marketplace of ideas. So allowing for that information to get out there is just another step to make sure that we're safeguarding that marketplace of ideas and allowing for that kind of debate to happen in the open.
It's weird to me because the left is so fond of finding every form of oppression, perceived or real, including all the way down to the microaggressions that are contained in certain ways of phrasing questions and statements when it comes to something like gender, race, or sexual orientation. And they turn around and are completely blind to the possibility that anything like that could exist when it comes to viewpoint or religious or belief. That it's weird to me. Unless it's intentional, you know, that kind of distinction does, you know, they don't understand the similarities there.
And the debate against it in committee, remember I serve on most of the committees that this bill was presented in. It very much felt like every opponent to the bill was competing on different levels of their own victimhood, you know, their own kind of status of victimhood, and it just became more and more obvious that their concern was that somehow they'd be disabused of their own notions if they were, you know, put on even playing field and asked to go debate the facts and go make the best arguments. And if you're that afraid of that information, you're telegraphing to the world that you believe you would not be successful in a free and fair marketplace of ideas.
Right. If you believe in your ideas, then you're excited to encounter people who disagree with you because you think you can persuade them. And if you're secretly afraid that your viewpoint is weak, then you're scared to encounter people of different opinions because they may show that you're wrong. And maybe you have to either change your mind or not look good in public. I don't think anything has changed, but I just want to check and make sure. The Bright Futures bill that has kind of been working its very herky-jerky way through the Senate, there is still no budget, there is still no House companion, and there's still no expectation this would be added on to a House bill, even though we're 4 weeks out, anything could happen. But still, at this point, this is a Senate-only issue, right?
Yes, and I'll also want to note that the Senate bill has been dramatically revised.
Right.
And maybe next week we can go into more detail about it. But there's no House companion. Actually, some House bills that refer to the same statute but do not do the same thing. The bill sponsors have had to make abundantly clear to all House members that they are not the Bright Futures companion to that bill because it has gotten so much negative attention in the press and amongst our constituents. So no. We are still not carrying a companion bill to it, and I don't anticipate one to jump out.
Well, I will take that. And, you know, sometimes when my industry covers something like the Georgia voting laws, we do a terrible job of representing the truth. I think when it comes to the Bright Futures bill, we've done a much better job of representing the real concerns that people have with the bill. And there's been, you know, an understandable, oh, no, from a lot of legislators as a result. Hey, this is a little bit of an odd question, but it's something that as I listen to a lot of these committee hearings, it occurs to me, and I think you'll have the answer. The protocol for talking in, like, debate, for example, or doing questions with a witness is to go through the chair. And there's this constant annoying, you know, chair, may I have yes permission to speak? And it's extraordinarily clunky. And I thought that had to be that way. But then I was watching a committee hearing the other day where the chair basically said, debate freely amongst yourselves. And it was so refreshing. Why do we use that other crazy, ridiculous system?
When you see some of our crazier committee meetings, you'll see why the chair has that authority to kind of regulate either way. It really is the chair's prerogative how they want to establish each meeting. You know, you ask a line of questions. Sometimes the chair would have to inject with some rules. If you know, someone engages too much in debate and questions, you know, the chair has to point that out, that you need to save that for debate. And, you know, sometimes debate can get out of hand. So it depends on the chair. It depends on the topic. but we trust our chairs and our staff to make sure that that debate and questions of the bill sponsor or if, you know, people testifying on bills are, you know, they proceed in an orderly, professional manner, so that we can, you know, just be efficient with our time.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I understand the answer. I just, as one citizen who watches a lot of these things, I really enjoyed the looser structure, and it seemed a lot more free-flowing and a lot more productive without the interruptions. I think the chair could still step in when need be, and did, but it wasn't needed as much. Anyway, I was just curious about that because I know you're, you know, very much familiar with all the parliamentary rules and how things are done in different ways. Alex Andrade, he is our state representative for District 2, the southern half of Escambia County, Gulf Breeze in Santa Rosa County, and, of course, Pensacola Beach. Alex, thanks again for the time. We'll talk to you next Monday.
Thanks, Andrew.